Hello and welcome to the Gatewatch cast. I am your host, Norman Sanzo, and joining me today is Wilson.
Hey, what's up?
So, Wilson.
Yeah.
We've done a lot of, well, I won't say a lot, but we've done a few deck techs here and there. We've done one on me, we've done one on some of our friends.
Yeah, true.
And, well, there's one person that we haven't done yet.
Who?
You.
Oh.
So, in today's episode of the Gatewatch cast, we will be taking a look at one of Wilson's newer yet powerful decks.
Yeah, it is quite powerful. So the commander that I have right now for this deck is called Mutani Yavimaya's Avatar. So Mutani is a 4/2 green 0/0 legendary elemental avatar. So it doesn't sound strong. Mm-hmm. It has reach, trample, and Mutani Yavimaya's Avatar gets +1/+1 for each land you control and each land card in your graveyard. And if you pay 1 in the green, return 2 lands you control to their owner's hand. Return Mutani from your graveyard to your hand. So yeah, it's strong.
It's at first glance, it sounds basic. Like, it's not that great because of the 6 costs. And it doesn't really feel that strong. Like, it's just basic when you take a look-see at it. Without really playing it. Because I remember when I played Mutani, it was in my Lord Wingris deck. It was okay. Like, it did the job, but it wasn't really that powerhouse that would say that, okay, this is a really strong commander until you played it.
Yeah, because if you don't build a deck based around its strategy, it's hard to pilot. So basically, what I do for Mutani is I either ramp or I have... and I protect it from other things. And I get it to maybe 14/14 at turn 5. Mm-hmm. So what I need for to help with them is my ramp spells. So basically, I try not to use too inefficient ramp spells. Usually, I would use either Harrow, Sky Shout Plane, maybe Securitas Root, anything that allows me to ramp from 4 mana to with 2 lands.
Okay, so basically you want to ramp out early as possible.
Yes.
And since you're playing in green, nobody really pays attention to the ramp because, hey, you're a green player and your whole gimmick is ramp.
Yes, correct. And it's... Or either I can use something called Movani Acid Moss to destroy my opponent's lands and I gain more lands as well.
That one is a bit sus.
Yeah, that's a very strong card. Because I played against a guy who had only 1 land, and I destroyed that land, and he was scooping.
Oh, yeah, that's just mean. That's just mean, though.
Yeah, but it was a 1/1. So, yeah, it doesn't matter.
Oh, yeah.
But my basic strategy, goes around ramp, and then trying to use getting Mutani down as soon as possible. Mm-hmm. Maybe making it hexproof or shroud it and let it attack through. And deal a huge amount of commander damage to my opponents. But if that doesn't work, I have a secondary strategy. I have 3 cards here that fit in the basic secondary strategy. The first card is... Why don't you read this?
Alright. So this one is Yorel, Empress of Beasts. Yorel is a 3/2 green creature.
Legendary shapeshifter.
Shapeshifter?
Spell
Shaper. Oh, wow. The wording on this one is really old.
Yeah, it's an old card.
So it is a legendary creature, Spell Shaper.
Human.
I think human?
She's a human.
Okay, wow. Oof, the errata text is going to be this one. Yeah. Anyway, it is a... Sorry. Yorel is a 3/3, and she has pay 2 and green, tap it, discard 2 cards from your hand until end of turn. All lands target player controls are 3/3 that are still lands. And at first, you would think, like, there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, that's strong. Like, you can swing with all your lands, especially if you have, what's that again? Embodiment of...
Insight. So, Embodiment of Insight is a 4 and a green creature that allows your creatures, land creatures, to have vigilance. So, basically, it's... the second base strategy is to animate your lands and keep attacking them while holding up mana with a body mode of insight. But there's a slight
catch to it.
catch to it. Yeah. Sometimes your if you tap your rail, you lose a lot of cards
mm-hmm.
because you need to discard two cards, and green isn't that prominent in drawing cards.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So to counter that, we have things like Shamanic Revelation, Ark of Oraska, or Return of the Wild Speaker.
Okay, so let's focus on one of the targets here because I noticing that we're jumping a lot of places. So let's go for the ramp strategy first. So,
sure.
Multani is a 4 and 2 green. That's a 6 CMC, and that's huge. Like, getting him out early is going to be a problem. And I think last week we mentioned that 6 CMC commanders are usually not that great.
Yeah, yeah, we do.
So, but what's the strategy in this one? Like, what's your game plan here? Like, I see that you have a lot of ramp spells.
Yeah.
So, let's just highlight some of the ones that are considered to be really great.
So, one of my two favorites is these two. It's the first one is Omen of the Hunt. It's a 2 and a green enchantment that has flash. And when it enters the battlefield, you may search your library for a basic card, a basic land card, and put it on the battlefield tap, then shuffle your library. And the other one is Harrow. I think most people know what Harrow is. Mm-hmm. It's a 2 and a green instant that has an additional cost to sacrifice a land. And you search for your library for 2 land, basic land cards, and put them onto the battlefield, and then shuffle your library.
Mm.
So these two are one of my favorites in the deck is because they are an instant speed ramp. So you can leave up mana, and you can pick your opponent's deck saying, oh, I have something in my hand that I can do. And then you can cast these, and you get more lands in the end. And Harrow is a personal favorite because Multani checks for land cards in your graveyard as well.
Mm.
So when you sacrifice the land, it also checks for the land in your graveyard as well.
Mm, all right, so that makes a lot of sense in terms of land strategy because when you have to sack a land, that's one of the
that's not really a good
that's not really side. A downside, but you have to think, okay, I'm sacrificing one land to get two cards or two lands back. Oh, fun bonus, if you are copying the spell, the cost for Harrow is already being paid, so what you get is four lands instead.
Yeah, that's true.
Just letting the audience at home know about the loophole.
Yeah, and I have four other cards that I really like as well, which is the first one is Growth from the Ashes.
Mm-hmm.
It's a 2 and a green sorcery. It has kicker 2, and it searches your library for a basic land card. But if you kick it, then it searches your library for 2 basic land cards and puts it on the battlefield.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I like this is because if I kick it, I can search for 2 basic land cards and put it on the battlefield, untapped. And then I can ramp and grow for another card.
Mm-hmm.
So this card is really, really bonkers if I have the correct sequence of cards in my hand.
Mm-hmm.
The next one, I think you should do it. It's one of the new cards from Zendikar Rising.
Ah, okay. So this card is Vestwood Surge. It is a 3 and 1 green sorcery card. It has kicker 4. Search your library for up to 2 basic land cards. Put them onto the battlefield tap. Then shuffle your library. If this spell was kicked, put 2+1/+1 counter on each creature you control. Oh, wow, that's really interesting.
Yeah.
I personally, for me, this is one of those cards where I find it too excessive. It's at start, it's already expensive because the CMC 4, and you only get 2 basic lands, but it doesn't come tapped, so that's always... No, it does come in tapped.
It does come in
tapped. Yeah, so that's bad. But the kicker part where you put +1/+1 counter on each of your creatures, that's good. For me, what? It's 4, 5, 6. It's an 8 cost?
Yeah, it's an 8 cost.
Yeah, for a total of 8 to get that benefit, it only works if you're playing in a...
Go-wide strategy,
F-ball and stuff.
Well, you see what's going to be happening next.
Okay.
But the other one is Secretus Root. It's also the same as Vassal Search, but it doesn't have the kicker. It says I can search for 2 basic lands or gate cards and put on the battlefield tap for 4 mana for 3 and a green.
That one is a really good card, but I find it very...
niche in a mono-green deck.
Yeah, because in a mono-green or especially like a mono-colored deck,
mm-hmm.
it's kind of questionable because you're paying 4 to get 2 basic lands tapped if you're playing mono-green. But if you're playing in a 2-color deck, you can always get gates.
Yep.
So that's that card there is very interesting. I'm not saying it's bad. I too use it, but I tend to remove it if I find a better card.
Yeah, true. With and the better card is this one. Mm. The next one is Sky Shark Claim. You read it.
Right. So Sky Shark Claim is a 3-1 green sorcery. Search your library for 2 forest cards, put them onto the battlefield, tap, then shuffle your library. Now this one is a good card. So pay 4 to get 2 forests. It doesn't say basic land or basic forest. So you can search for any card that has the forest text.
Yeah.
Forest type?
Forest type. So you can look for even a savanna, you can look for a bayou. As long as it has forest in it, you can search for it.
Yeah, so that card there is really good.
It's even better because it doesn't come in untapped. It doesn't come in tapped. Mm. So you can come it comes in untapped as well.
Yeah, so you will be netting 2 mana later on.
Yeah. So once I ramp a lot and I get Mutani out, my second one is using Kamal's Druidic Vow. So Kamal's Druidic Vow is an X and 2 green legendary sorcery. It lets me look at the top X of my library for how many X I pay. And I may put any number of lands, legendary permanents with CMC X or less onto the battlefield and put the rest under my graveyard. So this card is good because once I ramp out a lot of cards, I'm going to be needing even more power for my Mutani to one-shot my opponents. So I search for more lands from my library, put them out, and then I just swing.
Mm, so usually what do you pay for X?
Usually I pay X for 10.
10?
When I can. Mm. Yeah, because usually I really ramp a lot. And I don't really care for any card, any lands in my hand. I just ramp and ramp and ramp. And if I do not have enough mana, I can use this one.
Yeah, so this one is always a favorite in
a mono-color deck. Yeah.
So this one is Cage Sun. Its CMC is 6 and it's an artifact. Its ability is Cage Sun enters the battlefield, choose a color. Let's say green.
Yep.
Creatures you control of the chosen color gets +1/+1. Mm-hmm. Whenever a land's ability causes you to add 1 more mana of the chosen color, add 1 additional mana of that color. So this one is interesting because it helps a lot of mono decks, especially if you're in red, blue, or whatever color that doesn't really
ramp.
Help you ramp. Yes, but here's the thing. This one works well with one of the recent cards, Ayala. What was that one?
Ayara. The one that turns your creatures into forests.
Yes, because here's the wording. Whenever a land ability causes you to add one or more mana of the chosen color, so
you tap the creature for green, then you get another green.
Yep. So that's very interesting. But obviously, this one is for your ramps.
Yep. I'm planning on getting Ayara when I can get it, but it's so expensive.
Yeah, I mean, just crack packs, yo. Crack packs.
Yeah, no money. So, I already talked about Moonvali Acid Moss.
Mm-hmm.
And the last one from my ramp pile is Crop Rotation. Now, usually people don't think, oh, Crop Rotation isn't really a ramp spell.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a 1-for-1, which I don't think is that bad, but Crop Rotation allows me to select my lands.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a green and instant as an additional cost to cast a spell, sacrifice a land. Search your library for a land card, put that card onto the battlefield, then shuffle your library. So why I like this card is because I have certain lands that I can put down, like Reliquary Tower,
mm-hmm.
Ark of Raska, like this, and some non-basic lands that I need. And they come in, it doesn't say come in tapped, so they come in untapped, and I can immediately use them.
Yeah, I mean, Crop Rotation here is a good card, and the wording says sacrifice a land.
Yep.
So with Ayala, again, you could sack one of your
creatures.
Ayala doesn't target your tokens, right?
It says non-basic, non-token creatures.
Yeah, so you have to, you could sack your Elvish Mystic, so yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
So yeah, this card there, like, people say, oh no, it's not good because you have to sacrifice your land.
Yeah.
But what happens if your creature is a land?
Yeah, that's true. And my Mutani counts the lands in the graveyard, so it also appeals on graveyard as well.
Mm-hmm. So it all works well. So your ramp package is already there, and your ramp package is, what, around
It's more than this, actually. I have more ramp in my deck. So it's around 18. I have 10 here, which is okay. I have 18 in the entire deck, maybe even 20, I think.
Oh, wow. You really go
many for ramp. Count the lands. Yeah. Because ramp is very important in my deck, I have to have that much lands in order to attack one shot with Multani.
Ah, so your strategy for Multani is always to do commander damage?
Yes, because Multani, even if it dies, I can just bring it back from my graveyard.
Yeah, so that part we didn't really talk about it that much. Yeah. So one of Multani's best features is his ability to
avoid command attacks.
Yeah, because here's what is this? Like the bottom part where it says, pay one and green, return two land you control to their owner's hand. Return Multani from your grave to your hand. Usually when returning lands is a big negative.
Yeah.
But in this deck, it works because, well, it doesn't really matter because you're already ramping so hard and you're just getting more fuel. Like, even if you discard a land, Multani is still going to be strong.
Yep. So, and there's something for Multani, which is if I play something like Azusa or Wayward Sword 2 or anything and that allows me to play additional lands, it doesn't even count as a cost anymore.
Yeah, I mean, it's just laughable. The casting cost is just laughable. Like, I could just put it to my hand, pay 6, and then done. And since, what, if Cage Sun is there, I just tap 3 lands or whatever it is.
Yep. So, the next thing is, what will happen, how do I defend myself? Mm-hmm. So, usually, I have these two cards to defend myself against. One is an aggro deck, one is a
control
deck. Okay, so the first one is Molimo, Maro Sorcerer. He's a legendary druid, I think. He's a star trample for 4 and 3 green. He's basically a worse version of Multani, actually. So it says he has trample and says Molimo, Maro Sorcerer, power and toughness are equal to the number of lands you control. So basically, yeah, it's a mini Multani. But it's basically a worse version of Multani for higher cost. Mm. But it's there whenever Multani is swinging, because Multani doesn't have vigilance. Mm-hmm. So I need something on my battlefield to be able to defend the big creatures as well.
Ah, okay. Yeah.
So the second one against control, or maybe even storm decks, is Arasta of the Endless Web. So Arasta of the Endless Web is a 2 and a green, 2 green. 3/5 legendary enchantment spider. It has reach and says whenever an opponent casts an instant sorcery card, a sorcery spell, create a 1/2 green spider creature token with reach.
Mm. So this card here is to defend yourself from flyers and also
storm.
Yeah, because if somebody does storm,
at least I get things to do.
But only thing that will screw you up is unblockables and whatnot. But that doesn't really matter. Like, yeah. I'm sure you will find a way to get past them.
Yep.
So, what's the strategy when, let's just say, okay, I mentioned flyers. So, flyers is going to be the spider.
And Multani, he has reach as well.
Okay. Well, what happens if somebody plays an unblockable creature or needs to be blocked by two or more? Okay, the spider already deals with that one. But unblockables.
Well, if it's unblockables, I don't really have that much of a choice. Mm. If they can one-shot me, then I will let them one-shot me. Mm-hmm. But most of the time, I would... It really depends on how they choose to make it unblockable. Mm-hmm. If they use something like Rose Passage, usually I use Volley's Acid Moss to destroy it. If it has itself unblockable, but it doesn't have any shroud or any hexproof, I would just use something like Beast Within to destroy it.
That's always good. So, that there is in terms of protecting yourself. So, what about protecting your creatures? Like, I'm sure that you really don't want to cast Multani for 6 again and then bounce 2 lands to just get it back to your hand to pay for 6. And then also for what?
So I actually have 3 cards here that protect some of the creatures and some on the board. For some creatures, is the first one is Aspect of the Mongoose. Here you go. You read that.
All right. So aspect of mongoose, is a 1 green enchantment aura, enchant creature. Enchant creature can't be target of spell or ability. So this one is basically hexproof.
No, it's basically shroud.
Oh, shroud. Okay. Yeah. When aspect of the mongoose is put into a grave from play, return aspect of the mongoose into its owner's hand. So yeah, it is shroud. Oh,
and it's recurrable.
Yeah.
Because when, if let's say Mutani dies, then it to a board wipe, then I just return that and Mutani, when I pay for Mutani.
So people will ask, why not just use Lightning Grief? Because Lightning Grief is much better. Because you pay for 2 and then equip it for 0.
Yeah, I do play that. And I also do play Swiftfoot Boots. Mm. But this one's also enchantment aura, which makes it much more versatile.
Mm-hmm.
Because I can even put it on my other creatures as well. Yeah.
And also the part where people tend to miss out is when Aspect Mongoose is put into a grave from play, return Aspect Mongoose to its owner's hand. So basically you will be getting this every turn.
Yep, getting it back.
Yep. Even if Multani dies, this goes back to your hand. And it doesn't say from play or put into a grave from play. Okay, it does.
Yeah.
So you're kind of limited even if somebody discards your hand. So
yeah,
that's the only downside, but I don't really think that's a huge one.
Yeah.
Unless you're playing with a board that plays who's his name? Visits one.
Yeah.
Is it? No, Nekusa.
Ah yes, Nekusa.
Yeah, Nekusa's bad boy.
Okay. So for the second one is Hero Intervention.
Yep.
It's a 2/1 and a green instant. It says permanence you control gain hexproof and indestructible until end of turn. That one's a must play in any green commander deck.
That's already staple. Like it first previewed in Aether Revolt. Yeah, Aether Revolt.
And it was at $5 at most.
Yeah, and now it's been reprinted in Core 21.
And it's more than $10.
Yeah, but still, Heroic Intervention is one of those must play cards. It's similar to how Vampiric Tutor and Demonic Tutor are for black. So Heroic Intervention is a must play in green.
Yeah.
It's a staple card.
Yeah, next to Worldly Tutor, yeah.
Yeah.
So the third one is, there you go.
Alright, so next one is Assassin?
Ascetism.
Ascetism. Okay. Ascetism is a 3/2 green enchantment. Okay. Creatures you control can't be target of spell or abilities your opponent control. So hexproof. Regenerate target creature. Oh, you have to pay 1 green. So yeah. This is interesting. This really helps out your board.
Yep. It first gives a hexproof, then it gives you a regenerate as well.
Yeah. But the pay 2 cost for target creature, that's going to be expensive in the long run when you have a white board. But I don't think you're going to play white, right? You're just going to play strong.
Yep. And if I don't have these, I can always use this. Solo Nymphyrexia. Solo Nymphyrexia is a 6 mana artifact creature, 6/6. It has trample and pay 5, permanence you control, gain indestructible on your end of turn. And then pay 5, exile new Solo Nymphyrexia from your graveyard, permanence you control, gain indestructible on your end of turn. So basically it's a reusable hero intervention.
Hmm. But for expensive cost and doesn't give you hexproof.
Yeah, true. But it's good as well because indestructible is very, very strong.
True. I told Wilson this bit of combo where you play Icicle Scepter and what was the phrase that Exocron Scepter used?
Imprint.
Yeah, imprint, heroic intervention. So whenever you need your heroic intervention, you just tap 2 and tap the Exocron Scepter to copy the heroic intervention's ability.
Yeah.
So that's one way to get unlimited, quote-unquote unlimited heroic interventions.
Yep.
So that's a good way, but you have to remember you'll be exiling your hero intervention that you can recur, I think, in this deck. But what else? What else? Because I do see here that you have Antis.
Yeah. So I have 2 opposite cards here. So the first one is Rites of Flourishing. It's a group heart card. Group heart card. Mm-hmm. So it's a 2 and a green enchantment that says at the beginning of each player's draw step, that player draws a card, and each player may pay an additional land on each of their turns. So basically, yeah, this is a group card where I let my friends, let my team, my opponents draw more, play more lands, let them ramp a bit. But ultimately, I would get even more value because I'm in mono green. I get to draw more, I get to play more lands, and I get to use those lands to play more lands. Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course, their strategy will go faster, but I think in the long run, my run will go faster. Mm-hmm. And the second one is you read that.
So you say you have two cards that are the opposite of each other. So
basically,
you can already guess. So this card is Primal Order. 2/2 green enchantment. During each player's upkeep, Primal Order deals that much damage.
Deals to that player an amount.
Yeah. Order deals to that player an amount of damage equals to the number of non-basic land cards he or she controls. So, you play more lands, you play whatever you want, but Primal Order kind of tax you for it.
Yep.
And there's a positive and negative here. The positive side is if you are playing in a mono deck or you're a precon deck, non-basic lands are not that much, so you won't really get hurt that much.
Yep.
But if you're a deck that has been tweaked out, this is going to hurt you a lot.
Yep. This is going to be a good card.
Yep.
So, I have other cards in this deck that allow me to play more lands like this one.
Technically, it doesn't really allow you to play more, but...
Not from my hand.
Yeah. So anyway, okay, this card is Cursor of Kruphix. It's a 1/2 green enchantment creature, Centaur. It has 2/4, and play with the top card of your library reveal. That's iffy, but you may play the top card of your library if it's a land, so that's good. Whenever a land is a battlefield... under your control, you gain one life. So yeah, this card is well balanced, I say.
Yeah, I would rather get Oracle Mudaya, but too expensive.
Yeah, but still, the idea for this one is that you have, let's just say you have 7 cards in your hand, this one's out, the top library is open, and technically you have 7+1.
Yes.
Because if it's a land, you can play it, and yay, it's all good. But the negative side is that if it's not a land, you couldn't do much, and since you can only play land once per turn, if it's another land, then you're kind of AWOL.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, so do you know Montani can grow up to 14/14, right?
14/14?
Yeah.
Yeah, if everything's right.
Yeah, and do you know it can block? It can block a Ulamog.
Yeah, if it's done right.
Yeah. So if I can, if Montani can block an Ulamog, I would not want it to keep blocking Ulamog every turn. Mm-hmm. So I would use this card in order to make itself better.
So this is one of the newer cards. So this is called Shadow Spear. It's pay for 1. It's a legendary artifact equipment. Equipped creature gets +1/+1 and has trample and lifelink. That's already good. And it has pay 1. Permanent your opponent control, lose hexproof and indestructible until end of turn. And the equip cost is 2. So a total of 4, you can do almost everything.
Yep.
Yep, this is good. This is good. This is one of those cases where even if your opponent's cast Heroic Intervention, it's still loose.
Yep. Also, I like Shadow Spear because it gives you life.
Yeah. So we need to explain to the audience at home why does it work that way. Because, okay, the easiest way to look at it is Ken always wins against Ken.
Yeah.
So whenever your opponents do something like target creature or creature they control gains indestructible, and if you play out Shadow Spear and you pay the cost and it says permanence your opponent control lose hexproof and indestructible, that will always win out. Wins always win out.
Wait. Depends. Actually, it really depends. Let's say this one is a timestamp thing. It's not like the tower. The tower says you may target them as though they don't have hexproof and shroud. Mm-hmm. This one just says lose. So yeah. If let's say I activate that and then they hero intervention,
mm-hmm.
Basically they still get back the hexproof and shroud.
Okay, that's true. Timing is everything.
Timing is everything.
Pay 1 again.
yeah, just pay one again. It's just one mana.
Yeah. But no, true. Like, what Wilson said here is true because timing is everything. But, like, the general rule is Kent will always win against Ken.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, so I told you guys about my secondary strategy, right? Mm-hmm. Which is to attack with lands.
Yep.
I also have another card here that is very, very complicated. It's called Leash of the Tangle. Mm-hmm. It's a 6/2 green creature elemental 8/8 that has trample and says, whenever Leash of the Tangle deals combat damage to a player, you may choose any number of target lands you control and put a awakening counter on each of them. Each of those lands is an 8/8 green elemental creature for as long as it has an awakening counter on it. They're still lands.
What?
Yeah, basically it's a upgraded version of your rail.
So wait, how many counters?
Any amount.
Any amount?
So basically I can animate all my lands.
What?
Yeah, I'm not kidding.
Oh my god, that is just dirty.
Yeah, and since I have that much lands, I have... Those lands don't really have trample, so if I'm facing against a token deck, they can just chump block. Mm-hmm. So what do? I play this card.
So this one is Garuk's Uprising. It pays for 2 and green, an enchantment. When Garuk's Uprising enters the battlefield, if you control a creature with power 4 or greater, draw a card. Okay, that's going to be obviously easy because your lands are 8/8s.
No. Yeah, no, they don't really draw me cards.
I mean, when this comes into play, so you already
draw a card. Yeah, true.
Sorry, creatures you control have trample. That's dirty already.
Yep.
Whenever a creature with power 4 or greater enters the battlefield under your control, draw a card. So yeah, this solves the problem for green doesn't have way to draw. So yep. Yeah, green has a ways to draw.
Yep. So this card actually also helps my gold white strategy, which is to use my lands to attack. Mm-hmm. And a very interesting way to use Jor-El is also to use it on your opponent's lands.
Ah, yeah, because we all know where this is going because. There's a commander in green where you pay 1 green to animate or to make that land into a creature. I forgot the guy's name, but it's a really old card.
Okay.
But Jor-El is much better because you only have to pay 2 and green, tap it, and discard 2 cards from your hand to make all of target creatures...
All of your opponent's lands or your lands to be creatures.
Yep.
So basically, if somebody's trying to board white,
yeah,
saying creatures board white, let's say Wrath of God, and I have your real battlefield, bye-bye lands.
Yeah, that's, like I knew before, that's dirty. But a way to, I would say counter, is to have World Shaper on board.
Yeah, true.
Because if somebody does do that to you and World Shaper's there, you'll still get back all your lands. But it's that's a very niche scenario where that will never happen.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. You talked about card draw, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. This deck doesn't have that much card draw. So, Garuk's Uprising is one of them. And these other three, and these other cards are also part of them. So, the first one I'm thinking about is Return of the Wild Speaker. It's a 4 and a green instant and that says, choose one. Draw cards equal to the greatest power among non-human creatures you control. Or... non-human creatures you control get +3/+3 until end of turn.
So basically, if your Multani is on board and it's a 14/14,
I draw 14 cards.
Yep. So that is a strong draw card ability.
Yep.
And even if you don't, you get what? All of your creatures, like non-human creatures you control get +3/+3 until end of turn. So still, that's okay. I mean, in all honesty, I wouldn't use the +3/+3 if I'm not desperate.
Yeah. And the other card is a personal favorite of mine. If I have Arasta or Jor-El on the battlefield and I have a lot of spiders or I animate my lands, I use this.
Yep. So this one is Shamanic Revelation. CMC is 3/2 green. Sorcery. Draw a card for each creature you control. That's good. And it has Ferocious. You gain 4 life for each creature you control with power 4 or greater. So, Ferocious is whenever you have a creature with power 4 or greater, was it?
For each creature you have with 4 power 4 or greater.
Yeah. So this is a good ability to draw. Yeah, this is good. This is good. I'm just thinking, yeah, you go wide, you have a lot of tokens, and if your baby creatures are 4 or higher, you gain life, 4 life to be exact, so that's good.
Yep. And I also have other cards, like this one, Ark of Araska. It's a land that has ascend. If you control 10 or more permanents, you get the Sith's Blessing for the rest of the game, and it taps for colorless mana. But if you have 5 extra mana and you tap it, you draw a card and you can only activate this ability if you have Sith's Blessing. So it's really easy to ascend in this deck because you have a lot of lands on the battlefield, you have Mutani on the battlefield, so you just need to just use the lands to draw a card. Mm-hmm. So basically, I use this a lot because it's really good to me. Because I have a lot of lands and I don't really have that much instant speed stuff to do, mm-hmm. so I just use Ark of Araska to draw me cards.
Yeah, I remember we talking about this card way back when. And you said that you have it in almost all of your decks?
Yes, because to be honest, lands aren't really destroyed much unless people Armageddon you.
Oh, true, true.
So this is a good payoff and a good mana sinker whenever you have nothing in your hand or nothing to do.
Yeah, I mean, it taps for one colorless, so it doesn't really matter. And if you already have 10 or more permanents, you're just going to pay the 5 to get a card. And if you've got nothing to do, or let's just say one rotation, you can just pay 5 and just draw a card.
Yeah, so and if I see more moons on battlefield, I can just tap and draw, tap and draw, tap and draw. So the next one is a very personal favorite of mine as well.
Alright, so this one is Keeper of Fables. It's a 3 and 2 green creature cat with 4 and 5. Whenever one or more non-human creature you control deals combat damage to a player, draw a card. So if I get this right, if I have, let's say, 3 creatures that attacks the opponent and hits damage, I draw 3 cards?
If it's 3 different opponents, yes.
But if it goes to 1, I only draw 1. Alright, so it's that deal. Alright. So yeah, this is not bad. This is
yeah, the card. It also incentivizes me to try to hit more opponents in 1.
To go wide.
Yeah. But, it's just there.
Yeah, I mean, if you go wide, like with the spiders and whatnot, already you're going to reap the benefits.
Yep. And since I've drawn so many cards as well, I also have a payoff. I need to have a payoff for that. Mm-hmm. So I play Yorail, the other Yorail.
Yeah. So I built a commander around this one. And
it was bad.
It was, no, I won't say it's not bad, but it didn't really work well because of reasons. But anyway, Yorail,
Monvoli.
Monvoli Recluse. It is a 1 and green legendary creature, human druid. Oh, now the wording here is much better than whatever that one was. And it has 1 and 2. Whenever you draw your second card each turn, create a 2/2 green cat creature token. Pay 4 and 2 green. Until end of turn, creatures you control have base power and toughness XX, where X is the number of cards in your hand. Okay, so personally for me, the appeal for this one was whenever you draw a card, you create a cat
token. Yes.
Token. But I quickly noticed that sucks because it's not every second draw, whatever it is, it's every time it only activates once.
Yeah.
So you only get a token, and that's not great. Like, the idea for this one was not great.
Yeah.
But the payoff here, pay 6 to get XX, and with the amount of cards you draw just now, you're gonna be huge. Let's just say the base thing is what? You have 7 cards in your hand, pay 6, your creatures become a 7/7, but for Multani, it's not great. No, it adds on to there. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because Multani is a 0/0.
Yeah, so it adds because it's the base, not the additional. Yeah, yeah. So yeah, this is great. This is the payoff.
Yeah, this is very great in a Multani deck. And this is one of my favorite cards for Chaos. So it's the Great Aurora. It's a 6 and 3 green sorcery. Each player shuffles all cards from his or her and his or her hand and all permanents he or she owns into their library. Then they draw that many cards. Each player may put any amount of lands onto the battlefield from their hand. Then they exile the Great Aurora.
That is chaos there. But this helps bypass all those indestructible problems on the board, on the field. Like if you have creatures that are indestructible or permanents that you need to get rid of that are kind of, well, troublesome. Let's get rid of them.
Yeah, and it shuffles them back into the deck.
Yeah, and but here's the thing. The only negative for that one is you shuffle all permanents you control, including your lands. So let's just say you have something like your board, let's just say the board state is like you have 10 lands and 5 permanents.
Okay.
You shuffle everything back, including your hand, right?
Yes.
And then, so let's just say 20.
Yep.
Shuffle back, you draw 20, and you put back all your lands that are there. If you're unlucky, you may get a... Well, you may put on 5 lands.
Yep.
So, that sucks.
That's what happened to my opponent once. I got 10 lands, he got 5.
Oh, that sucks.
Yep. But it was better. He only had 3 lands.
Okay, yeah.
So basically, the Great Aurora is just an outlier in the deck. It's just there for chaos reasons.
Yeah, oh, it also uses up one of your opponent's removal or counter spells.
Yeah, if they try to counter it.
Yeah, because obviously blue players are going to counter that, because the thing about blue players is that they want to set up their board for their combo wins. And the Great Aurora here
really screws them up.
Yeah, so they need to stop it at all costs.
Yep. So they either Force of Negation, Force of Will, even try to counterspell it.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter to me. I'm just using it so I can waste counterspell so I can cast better stuff.
Yeah, and also sometimes your other friend, opponent, person is that's stuck on 2 lands for 5 turns now. It's just going to have, yay, I get to shuffle back.
Yep.
If they get, 10 lands on their whatever turn is, that's great. But if they get no lands, they're screwed.
Yep. Also, if I want to protect myself against blue cards, counterable cards, I have 3 cards, 4 cards in my deck as well that counter that. The first one is Savage Summoning. Savage Summoning is a 1 green instant that says Savage Summoning cannot be countered. Mm-hmm. And Savage Summoning says the next time you cast a creature spell this turn, that creature spell cannot be countered. Mm. When that creature enters the battlefield, it gets a +1/+1 counter on it.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah. The second one is Veil of Summer. Mm. It says it's a 1 mana instant that says draw a card if an opponent casts a blue or black spell this turn. You and permanents you control gain hexproof from blue and black. Your spells cannot be countered this turn. The third one is Shifting Ceratops. It's a 2 and a blue, 2 and 2 green, 4/5, that says Shifting Ceratops cannot be countered. It has protection from blue, and it has if you tap for a green, it says Shifting Ceratops gains the keyword of your choice, either trample, haste, or reach. The fourth one is Prowling Slipapart. It's a 3 and a 4 for a it is a 1 and 2 green for a 3/4 that is a legendary, it has a creature's cat snake that says Prowling Slipapart cannot be countered. And Prowling, creature spells you cast can't be countered as well. Mm. So basically, those 4 cards are in the deck to protect myself against blue as well.
Those are really good cards. Like, you already set the gamut of what you want to do and protect yourself. I mean, you already got your draw ideas, you already got your ramps, you got your
protections
and whatnot. So yeah, I see that, well, most of the cards on the desk right now are there to do the job. So how does this deck play?
So basically, the main idea for the deck is to ramp really, really quick. So as you can see here, most of my ramp spells are a bit not really that high, but more towards the medium, which is 3 to 4. So usually, ideally the first turn I would either have a Veteran Explorer or maybe a Soul Ring or maybe even Myriad Landscape. Those are the best. And then turn 2, if I have the Soul Ring or my Veteran Explorer dies, I can search for my lands, ideally search for my lands using the ramp spells. And turn 3, I can ramp even more with the 4 mana spells. Mm-hmm. And by turn 4, my Mulkani can come out with protection.
Ah, okay. So just basically the idea for this deck is to ramp in as fast as possible to get out Mulkani.
Yes.
And just get him, well, just get him to be on the board just to be your wall.
Yes. And usually, if I get out Mulkani on turn 4, it's usually a 5-5 or 6-6 already.
Okay, so that's always good.
Yes.
So what happened if you, do you add in stuff like the elves, like the mana dorks?
No.
Why is that?
Because I want my mana to be in land forms. I'm okay with using colorless mana for using artifacts, but I don't really want creatures there because the creatures are very easily removed.
Right.
Artifacts are harder, and my opponents can waste their artifact removal on my artifacts, so that something else that I put down in the future, like Cage Sun or Soul Nephraxia, will stay.
Or maybe your Shadow Spear will be protected.
Right? My Shadow Spear will also be protected. So basically, I do not want my opponents to be able to board wipe, and I'll be set back a lot.
Yeah, okay, so that does make sense. That does make sense because personally for me, I love the dorks. Like Elvish Mystic, Lorna Elves, Abo Elves, what else?
Gilded Goose.
I don't have a Gilded Goose, but Sylvan Chaotic,
Birds of Paradise. Birds of
Paradise, all the stuff. Like, those dorks are really fun to use because, hey, turn one, play land, tap, use the, whatchamacallit, Elvish Mystic. Okay, now turn two, play land. Now, tap for a elf, Lorna Elves. Now, use two to get in your boots. Now, tap one to equip the boots. Yeah, then tap one to get a soul ring out.
Yeah, that's a really fast one. But the downside to that is usually okay. So this is a mental thing. Most people, when they see two lands and maybe one or two mana dorks in the hand, they were like, this hand is keepable. Mm-hmm. And when they do not draw lands and your mana dorks are destroyed, they're screwed.
But in all honesty, when you really think about it in terms of casual play, like turn one into Lorna Elf is not that bad. But I do get what you mean. I do get what you mean because if somebody were to play very aggressively and were to take out your elves or dorks, you'll be set back a lot because what you want is lands or artifact or mana rocks. So that way you have some way to ramp out cleanly, because if you play creature ramps or creature lands or creature mana, usually they will die out first. And in Game of Commander, removing creatures are much more easier than removing lands and artifacts.
Yes, but there's also one more thing. There was this game where I was playing. I forgot which deck I was playing, but it had something called Rebuild, mm-hmm. which is return all artifacts back into opponent's hand, into their own hand. Mm-hmm. My opponent kept the one lander, and he had a bunch of mana rocks.
Mm.
So he played all those mana rocks. And by turn 3, he set up all his mana rocks. Then I had a Thalia on battlefield, and I cast a Rebuild. Uh-huh. So basically, all his mana rocks needed to pay one more, and they were all back into his hand.
Oh god!
And since he couldn't cast all of them, he had to discard.
Oh god!
So basically, yeah, that's one of the same scenarios where I mentioned just now, which is people have a mentality that they have to keep that hand because they have a lot of mana dorks or mana rocks, but they completely ignore the fact that lands are, they do not have enough lands.
Yeah, I mean, we'll talk about
that in another separate video, yes.
I mean, the psychology of what to keep on your first turn and whatnot. I mean, it is a very interesting topic. Maybe we'll do it for next week. Who knows? But so, Wilson, thanks for talking about your deck, and I faced it before and it's dang scary. Like, yeah, I mean, if you would like to share the deck with the audience at home, do give us a
list.
Top deck? Yeah, sure. Yeah, talk that list. Then we'll put it into the show notes and whatnot. But anyhow, let's move on to the next topic. And next topic is combo of the day. So Wilson, do you have any combo of the day?
So the combo of the day was accidental combo. It was seen by a lot of players on another stream. I won't name the stream, but it was a very famous one. So the combo went like this. So let's say you're playing and you have an opponent who played an Elish Norn.
Mm-hmm.
So you, what you need to have is I Dockside Extortionist in your graveyard or in your hand, and then you play and you need Underworld Breach.
Mm.
So what happens is this. You need to have a sizable amount of cards in your graveyard. You play Underworld Breach. Then you play Dockside Extortionist. So, Dockside Extortionist will immediately die.
Yeah, yeah.
Because of state-based effects from Elish Norn. So, it dies. Then, you get that many, any amount of treasure tokens equal to your opponent's artifacts. Then, you may recast it by exiling, by using Underworld Breach's escape ability.
Oh, yeah.
Then okay. You keep casting, then you keep gaining a huge amount of tokens. And then you win by however you want to win using those treasures.
But at the same time too, you still need to exile 3 cards in your grave. So yeah, it's not unlimited.
Yeah, but you need a sizable amount. So it's an accidental combo in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean that there is already good. Like, yeah, that combo is all, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but it's a very... It's a very situational combo where you need something to be minus.
Yeah, I mean, getting that effect there is not great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Either your opponent has 2 Elish Norns, or you have two of the, whatchamacallit? I forgot, the one that says creature spells cost 2 less to cast.
Oh.
And then you might Heartless Summoning.
Mm.
Yeah, so if you have 2 Heartless Summoning on battlefield, you can also do that. Maybe you use a Mirage Mirror to copy the Heartless Summoning. Who knows?
Yeah,
there's a lot of ways to use the combo. You just need to find a way to use it.
Alright. That is pretty interesting combo, but it all... said combo is dependent on your opponent. But still, you did mention it's an accidental combo and it was recently seen on stream.
Yes.
I'm guessing if you do follow the Magic community, you already know. I personally have an idea, but I got no idea because I'm still catching up on YouTube.
All right.
So anyway, let's wrap it up. So okay, if you guys have any question, concern, or suggestions for the show, you can contact us at thegatewatchcast@gmail.com. And also please subscribe to us on iTunes, YouTube. Don't forget to press the bell icon to stay up to date. Links will be in the show notes. And today we are recording in Alexandria Bookstore. Links to their page will be inside the show notes too. So anyway, I have been Norman Sanzo.
And I'm Wilson.
And we'll guys catch you next week with another fun episode of the Gatewatchcast.
See ya. See ya.